This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, February 9th, 2011.
It doesn't mean that people have time to eat or get food. So I would like to call the meeting to order. And the first and issue on the agenda here is the approval of the minutes from January 26th, 2011. I'm not going to ask whether anybody's read it. I'm going to say, are there any objections?
No.
I don't hear any objections. Hearing no objections, a motion is in order to approve the minutes.
Second?
Okay. Any discussion? Oh, I have no idea who said it.
I moved it open here.
Fine. Howard. All in favor?
Aye.
Good. Minutes are approved. We now come to the CJC resolution, and I don't have a copy of that.
Did everybody get a chance to sort of read over the whole series of little changes to the CJC? No, and they didn't.
Do you have the electronic card?
I am going after it right now.
It seems like in general it takes the burden off of your end.
Yeah, so I mean, they didn't really offer to come, and then when I which I thought like maybe somebody would want to come. My opinion, to me personally, it just didn't seem like anything really objectionable, so I didn't open it up. Who is our CJC liaison right now?
I said I would have been. When I emailed them originally, they had said that somebody else had taken it over. I'm not really sure, but it was kind of, I volunteered to do it, but it was never really in my hands. It was already like being taken care of by the FA. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
All right.
Well, maybe we can go, when Ari pulls it up digitally, we'll go over it and see. We have another meeting later this month, so if we feel like there's something.
Actually, I think it'd be nice if we had an update from
them?
Yeah, or Mirjet Grant or somebody, just to say how the new campus code has been running. Is this all what they want to change or they want to change things this year? Yeah.
Randy, do I detect a motion to table?
No. Oh, no.
I mean, you want to pass this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No. Just I would have liked the opposite order, but I'm happy to pass it.
Here's the resolution.
Well, that's the resolution, but we need the memorandum.
I'm just concerned a little bit that we haven't been through the details here. I've looked through it. It looks harmless to me, but maybe others are going to see something if they review it carefully.
Do we want to just table it then and get CJC?
The question around the table is how do people feel about it? Would you like? Yeah.
Do we know if there's a person to pass this now?
Yes, I was going to.
That's a good question.
I have no idea. There was certainly no.
Because I would honestly just prefer that they come here and do it the right way. But if they want us to pass it, and I don't think we have an issue doing it, we'll do that too.
I don't believe in you.
Yeah, there was no indication in their email that I saw that they needed it now. I think they wanted it passed. But she did say in her email, if you have any, if there's, let me know how this comes up, resolves itself. If there are any issues arise, contact me.
I think I would prefer to table it and let them come and talk to us about it. Mm-hmm. Also give us a chance, for those of us who have not read it, to read it.
Right.
I suppose we need a motion to table.
I move.
Second.
All in favor? Okay, unanimous. All right, we got rid of that. Now,
motion to table whatever's next time.
No.
But we don't get the director of the BPA until 5:30. So we're going to have the director of the CCA join us for the CCA resolution. So.
Okay.
We all need to talk until 5:30.
The The next item on the agenda is the charter resolution. And Ed, you want to take the lead?
Okay. So, as everybody has seen, we talked about the last meeting, the, OU's council.
Yes.
Okay. So, we talked about the last meeting, the, I forget, what is it, December, no, January 25th version of the charter, I think. So, we tried to get the Sun to publish a thing saying, please go online and check out the charter. The Sun didn't want to publish that. So we had to, we asked the chairs of the different assemblies to distribute, and I know it got to the graduate students. I know it got to the faculty senate. I haven't heard if it was distributed. I know Vince saw it in the essay. I don't know if Vince sent it along, but it did get distributed out, you know, roughly as well as we could without the Sun deciding to print it for us. Held an open forum that Randy joined me for. In Weill Hall, nobody showed up. I did receive a couple of feedback in the sense that Creston Mansell, who's the chair of the GPSA, looked it over and said, yeah, still looks fine. Nighthawk Everson, Derek Everson, who's the graduate student trustee, looked it over, and he's someone who I look at and sees details and things. Said that as far as he's concerned, it's exactly how a charter should be, pared down, nice, he had no objections. Those are really the only comments that I received. They weren't the only comments that I received. And I'm not aware of any other comments that anybody else has received. So it appears that there doesn't seem to be any objections around. So that said, there's no amendments unless anybody has anything they want to change to it.
Just a comment. Just from the essay's perspective, I went to them at the very beginning of the year and asked if they had wanted to put any ideas into the charter. They obviously didn't have a template at that point, but they didn't have any suggestions, so it wouldn't surprise me if they just didn't have an issue at all, just to confirm that.
Okay. Yeah, but I've seen Vince a couple of times, and he hasn't said anything correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I Robert's Rules of Order, all 900 pages.
Wow.
That's memorized.
The proposition.
I do have two, like, teeny weeny, tiny little itty bitty amendments. And
one.
And they're nothing significant. And they're things I've said before. One is Article 5.1 in the Charter. It says a ranking member must be appointed for each constituency. I think it should say the constituency, because there are four constituencies, there are three executive positions, the ranking member is the other one. Right, yeah. I think I emailed Ari about this back in November, and I sent a bunch of changes to Article 5, and you incorporated all of them except that one. Right? I mean, unless I'm missing something. I think it makes people wonder, well, who are the other ranking members when there's only one ranking member? And the other very teeny tiny little very small amendment is exactly the same thing, and that's Article 6.1. The board consists of the officers and the ranking members of the assembly. Should be ranking member, no S. This makes things consistent with Article 5.4.4, which is responsibilities of the ranking member.
Evan, I think they're small, but I think they're very important.
Well,
I'm glad you pointed those out.
It's just, you know, I worry, and, you know, somebody might read this document.
Can I suggest that those are not so substantive that they require another meeting?
Yes, I think they are. I would, unless people object, I would declare them to be
semantic
corrections.
Yeah, I apologize for not saying them sooner. That's my fault. Because I thought mistakenly that they were already in there.
Sure.
And that's I should have double checked that sooner.
Ari, can you fix them?
Well, I certainly don't want to derail the process.
And
if this would, I'm happy to withdraw.
I don't think so. I think we can just if we just all accept them as, I don't think they're substantive. I think they're just clarifications.
And while Ari is correcting those, Ed, the next time you talk to the Sun, tell him the item is controversial.
Then they'll publish it.
Yeah. I was hoping that wouldn't be the case. Yeah, they just basically said they don't want to print updates from organizations.
Yeah, there's no time to help you.
So we have actually resolution one, the very first resolution, which we did this year, which is basically moving the charter so that we can vote on it. And it's now updated in January 26th version of the charter. Resolution one also includes the bylaws, which is maybe something we should talk about here. So we've moved a significant amount of material from the current charter into bylaws. Stuff that basically is internal operating procedures and rules. Notably, the committees are all in the bylaws now. We've taken straw votes and talked about the bylaws and specifically the committee structures. If anybody needs to recall in memory, we've resolved on three broader scope committees. There's the camp infrastructure committee, the well-being committee, I think.
Yeah, welfare.
Welfare committee, and one third one.
Campus welfare, campus infrastructure, and CJC.
And CJC, yeah, of course.
Is this for today? Structure.
Well, so
for the charter, though?
Well, we need to talk about how should that go. So, resolution one that was moving forward. And if we just vote on, so remember the charter requires two-thirds vote and presidential approval. Bylaws only require the majority of the members of the university assembly and no presidential approval. Bylaws are much easier to change, adjust if they're not perfect. Well, the charter, we've spent a considerable amount of time to make sure this was as perfect of a document that we can make it for the presidency. The bylaws are internal operating procedures, so we can change those much more fluidly. So resolution one would set both the new bylaws and the new charter in effect on June 1st, 2011. So if we chose here today to vote on resolution one, which includes both charter and bylaws, the president then gets to see what we think is a perfect charter, and he doesn't need to approve the bylaws. And we have a paired set that nothing is left in limbo, nothing taken out of the current charter is left in limbo and is not in a set of bylaws that can be enacted on the first. And then we have a considerable amount of time to, those are bylaws and we can change those very, very easily in the subsequent meetings. So maybe we should have a discussion on what people want to do.
I'd like to vote just on the charter, because I don't think we've had sufficient discussion. I think we had sufficient discussion on the next charter, even though I lost every round. But we didn't have sufficient discussion on the bylaws.
And I want to remind on resolution one, is that resolution one right there? Resolution, can you go, let's see. So we do also, be it therefore resolved, the Child Care Services Subcommittee remains an ad hoc committee reporting the Family Services Committee for the remainder of the year. So we're acknowledging that worked, and we do have some people here today that can talk about Child Care Subcommittee. So I don't know, I'm just rambling. Does anybody else want to take it? Charlie, do you have anything you want to say?
You know,
my rambling?
I hear Randy's point, and I feel uncomfortable about the bylaws. On the other hand, how would people feel about the idea of passing Resolution 1 as it stands, which approves the bylaws, imperfect though they may be, with the understanding that at the next meeting, we really will devote it to fine-tuning the bylaws? I'd love to get the charter done and approved if we can at this meeting, so we can go forward, and so we really are done with that. And I think the bylaws need a little more attention. And I agree with Randy. Yeah.
I wonder if I might propose, as I read the agenda, all we have, we're doing CPA at 5:30, so we've got 45 minutes.
We also have a report from Linda from the Child Care Center,
Right. I know that was on the last agenda.
I actually feel if Lynn and Lynette got to speak somewhere around now, I'd be more comfortable about maybe voting on the bylaws if once they get a chance to talk about how effective their committee has been.
That's basically what I was going to say. If we discuss for the next however many minutes we have to discuss, and then we can decide how we feel, circa 5:30, 5:20, about what we want to do.
Leon?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that I have to leave at 5 o'clock for another meeting that I'm required to attend. And if the discussion is still underway, I would vote in favor of the charter and of the resolution.
You can proxy yes.
Can we?
That.
We bring up resolution 5.
Well, that what happens, if, as I read the emails that we're going back and forth, is we have two other people who can only arrive at 5 o'clock. I have to leave at 5, but I can come back around 5:20-ish. No, I keep it 5:10.
So whatever we do, we're going to be.
This book says that we can't have proxy votes.
Oh, no,
really?
Yeah. I'll read you the relevant section if you want.
Well, one question other thing. In Congress, which probably isn't the best model, stuff like this happens all the time, where legislation with problems are passed and then a fixer bill is passed.
You know, there. Sorry, I just want to raise.
Yes, please go ahead.
I don't have a solution for it, but so the issue is that if the charter is passed alone, it deletes a significant part of the charter with the intention of putting it back in the bylaws. So it leaves a large part of the UA's operations in limbo. Now. You know, as long as there's agreement among the assembly about where that limbo goes, how we should proceed, we're fine. But I think it would be better to have some kind of documented agreement that we can point to and say this is what the policy is until the UA finalizes the bylaws. And I think that the new bylaws are the most thought through of the options that we have right now.
If that's the case, then it would seem to me that one way to proceed is to, at this point, vote for the charter and the bylaws together with the understanding that we will come back at the next meeting to consider the bylaws, and we are they are relatively easy to revise, and that way doesn't leave us in limbo, as Ari said. Yeah, it may be the bylaws are imperfect, but at least they're better than nothing.
We can very easily change the bylaws again at the next meeting.
Exactly.
That's my feeling.
We need the majority of the people in this room.
Yeah. Does that seem like a reasonable way to proceed?
I agree with Art. We basically can't pass the charter unless we also pass the bylaws.
So
the remaining 7 minutes.
Do we have...
We need 13 people, I believe, because we need... two-thirds, and two-thirds of 19 would be 12 and a little bit, right?
12 and a piece, yes. Do we round up or round down?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 12.
Mm-hmm. Are we waiting? Well, luckily we have some speakers.
Okay.
I can return.
I'm going to come back also.
I can come back also. What time do you think will be at that point, like 45 minutes from now or an hour from now? I can come back.
Who knows is my feeling.
Can we do what Congress does and just run the vote for an hour? And people can put their votes in? Let me check.
My feeling is we have a close enough to a quorum now for the two-thirds. I think if we all vote in favor... and then the next person that wanders in,
they'll vote no.
We all vote in favor, and somebody else walks in and votes for it. We've got them.
Exactly.
Is there anyone who's been deliberately absent or just get them.
Who?
No. No, we don't have to reduce our denominator. Or does anyone have anybody that's phone number? We don't have a
I mean, we can essentially run the vote as an ongoing vote.
Let's
we can vote. It's a running vote. If the person, next couple people that come in, need a little bit of discussion, we can discuss. But it's a running open vote.
Let's do that. I think that makes sense. I'd like to get on with Linda before we waste too much more time. So I would ask all in favor of the motion, please raise your hand.
Resolution one.
All in favor of resolution one, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. So we've got 12 in favor. And
next person walks in, we just say, hold up your arm.
That's right.
You want to talk to us?
Okay, so I just wanted to give a little bit of an update on what's been going on in the progress on the child care center.
Yes, please.
We just finished up our last parent survey, and overall every single item went up in the parent survey. And in fact, we had some items where 100% of the parents felt that met or exceed expectation. An example of that would be the assessments on their children, the information they're getting on their children, and their children progress. And that was one of our areas of concern a year ago. And 100% of the parents said that they felt it met or exceeded expectations. 97% of the parents felt their children have benefited from being in the center. Across the board, the Bright Horizons management numbers were 89% and up in terms of feeling meets or needs expectations. So there's been significant progress in the child care center to report. And I would like to acknowledge some of the suggestions and support that the Child Care Services Subcommittee has given in helping us with that turnaround. I mean, first and foremost, really helping us in noting that there were some changes in attention that needed to be made on that, and we responded as a department very quickly and put a lot more resource against it. Some of the other things that they recommended were things around bringing more expertise from the community in to help with that, helping to get the director of the child care center better engaged into understanding the Cornell culture and some leadership training, doing some more assessment of the environment. So they've been very helpful in suggesting different ways to help improve it, and you know, and that improvement has happened. The other thing I'd say is they've been very engaged in the fairness and allocation of the child care grants, and that's something that they've been really keeping its hats on for the last few years, and in fact they've helped us with making some good revisions to try to help employees that needed more assistance to get that assistance. So I want to acknowledge that too. And most recently, and Lynette can talk about that, we were engaged in, now we've moved beyond the child care center and are engaged in some very important conversations that I think really affect a lot of the constituents on campus, which is taking a look at the local school calendars and time off, and how there's child care challenges that with the whole community when the schools are closed and people still need to come to work. So that's something that we're working on very closely with that committee, and they have a lot of really good ideas and suggestions, as well as trying to encourage more flexibility in the workplace to support people with their child care concerns. One other thing I'd really like to say and mention is child care hasn't been as forefront an issue because if you look at some of our statistics as a university, number one, we haven't been doing a lot of hiring. So a lot of the new incomers to the community would typically be some of those that would be having more child care needs, as well as birth rates in general across the country have declined over the last few years. And when we took a look at our own data, since 2007-2008, we've seen a decline in the number of births in the Cornell community. So I think that what's going to happen in the next couple of years as we start to bring on new staff and as we kind of pull out of this financial, we're going to have another big baby boom. So it's going to become a much more higher priority. And right now in the community, we've seen of the 104 group family home care centers that existed 3 years ago, they're down to 48 left. And when that baby boom happens, we're going to be we're going to have people who maybe have to turn down offers at the university because they can't find childcare in the community. So I just think it's going to be something that's going to impact many constituents, and I do think it's something that will need to stay on the radar of an important thing for us to focus on. And I'd extend it to say beyond even childcare, dependent care. And Lynette, I don't know if you want to say anything on that. I can share in the faculty senate, the faculty survey that just wrapped up. One of the things we thought was really a shocking statistic is 37% of the faculty who responded to that said if ever they were ill or injured, that they would need help finding care for themselves. So care, personal caregiving, I think, is really important. And we also saw a large number, I believe it was 37% or so of faculty who said that they either currently are or plan to in the next 5 years be caring for parents or other adults. So we caregiving in general across the community is becoming more and more of an issue and more stressful to all constituent groups on campus. So I just would really like you to keep that in mind as you're going forward and thinking about what kind of, it's really important to us that we have constituent voices to understand what kinds of programs make the most sense as we go forward to really help us identify the needs out there. And so I just really wanted to mention that to this group as you're going forward and thinking about the committees that you're forming and the way that you're looking at your charter and bylaws going forward. I don't know, Lynette, if you want to. Yeah,
we've been doing for years a lot of benchmarking and understand all the full range of programs that we can have, whether we're talking on from a child care perspective, and not just in terms of center, you know, in terms of looking at nanny options, looking at parent networks, in terms of like, expanding family home, creating what we call pods where family care providers are connected in with a particular center, both from a staffing perspective and a training perspective. A number of different ranges from there, and even when we're talking about other forms of dependent care, focusing on elder care, we have an understanding of all the range of ways that we can address the issue. The reality is that it's knowing what's important for the Cornell community, and that's something that the Child Care Services Subcommittee can really help to inform in terms of understanding if we have these six choices that in terms of how we approach child care or any kind of dependent care, what's the one, particularly with our limited resources university-wide, what's the one or two that makes the most sense for our Cornell community? And that's where we will really be relying on the subcommittee in terms of getting that information and having an understanding of what our community needs.
Mm-hmm. Are there questions or comments?
Yeah. I know that there were talks earlier in the year about implementing a sliding scale for tuition at their child care center. Are there any developments there?
There is no developments at this point yet, but it's not off the table in terms of talking about. Because right now, most of the centers in the area do have some sort of a sliding scale. What our version of the sliding scale was a supplemental grant program for our child care center. And so, and we've had some people who have not taken it because what it does is it pushes them up into a taxable benefit. They get up to $5,000 without taxation, but beyond that, IRS regulations requires it. So it hasn't, some people have turned it down because they didn't want the tax implication with it. So what we're looking at is how we could take that funding and possibly work it into some sort of thing. What I'm waiting for is some of the benchmark data in the community so we can understand what some of the other centers are doing and what their sliding scale programs look like. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about it. So it's not off the table yet. We just haven't made any decisions one way or another.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Howie?
I'm sorry, just an information question. I gather from the conversation you folks are from human resources?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
So, right. And you gave results of a recent poll. When was that taken? And how was that arranged?
The parent survey at the Child Care Center.
Yeah.
It started mid-December, and because of the holiday break, we ended up closing the survey the second week of January.
Uh-huh.
And it was an anonymous survey linked to some Survey Monkey.
Uh-huh.
And it was based on the same questions that we had used for the two preceding ones so that we could track progress on them.
And what kind of return did you get? Did everybody participate?
No, we had the same response rate we had in the previous survey, which was 41% families responded to the survey.
Thank you.
Yes.
I wanted to ask, do we have, about graduate students specifically, I imagine this includes undergraduates too, I should just say students then, a good demographic data, how many students have children, how, where they live, what sort of access to child care issues they're facing. I know of a survey that was done now 6 years ago by the GPSA that asked these sorts of questions, but I don't know, and this may just be my ignorance, of any sort of survey that's been done since then. I mean, do we even know how many students have children?
We don't know our office. It would actually be extremely helpful if that was done.
And it's really not collected. When that survey was done, we actually used that when we set up the child care grant program for students, and it was because we had a general idea as to what the number was. But there, it was a matter of using a number of different resources in terms of the graduate students. The graduate school knew about how many students had families, and we talked with financial aid to get an idea as to how many students might have, but it's not a total number. We knew that.
Okay. I mean, this is, you know, I've somewhat of an ongoing conversation with Brenda Witts. Well, I feel I have an ongoing conversation. She doesn't know who I am. about these sorts of things, because the graduate school does a survey of all graduate students every 5 years, and I think it's their place to be asking these sorts of questions. I don't think it's the GPSA's place. And well, I suppose on one level it's heartening that our survey from 6 years ago was used. I think it's also troubling that there isn't more current data. There isn't, you know. I mean, this sort of informs my feeling about speaking to our graduate students specifically, is that graduate students with children are sort of an invisible constituency.
Right. And we do have a number of graduate students at the center who utilize the center, less yeah. undergraduates. In mm-hmm. fact, it's really dwindled down, frankly, since the grant program for students amount was decreased.
Right.
Yeah. Although the comment,
yeah, I have two things. One, it seems that the benefits, the things, the problems have diminished, and things have been very, very good, or in getting very good. And I want to say there's just another side, and that's the cost of the benefits. And as we discuss things, we'll have to keep that in mind too. I want to say one other thing about friction. And when you ice skate, if there were no friction between the blade and the ice, you couldn't go anywhere. And there was some friction that went on in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that was necessary to go in the good direction mm-hmm. that we've gone.
Mm-hmm. Are there other comments or questions?
I have one question, you know, either of you two or Randy may be able to answer, that after the president made his decision to stay with Bright Horizons, prior to that, the Child Care Services Subcommittee spent a lot of effort, looking at what were the issues that were going on there and making recommendations to us about how to move forward, finding a new provider. That issue's been resolved now. Has that committee changed gears and it's now, you know, looking at how do we work with parents and address the current issues there, stay with our guidance and work productively together? Has it been a smooth transition, a reorientation of effort?
Yeah, because the subcommittee is now looking at, you know, the coordinating of calendars, which is an issue mm-hmm. that will impact this entire university. So, you know, we've got work going with the center. We're going in the right direction. We really need to be shifting in terms of looking at all the other areas of child mm-hmm. care, and this is one that has come up before, and it's coming up again. And so the subcommittee is having conversations now about, you know, what can their role, what can they be doing in terms of moving this effort forward, connecting with the faculty senate that apparently is also looking at the issue, and seeing what we can do in terms of, like, really sort of combining resources to focus in on that issue. Because getting the school districts to work with us, so to speak, will be a challenge. And we're going to need the subcommittee really kind of helping to push the issue in conjunction with others.
I think we've been working very productively. The last meeting we had was extremely productive in kind of laying out what we're all going to be working on going forward. And we will continue, as per the resolution that was passed last March, continuing updating that committee regularly on progress and happenings at the Child Care Center, because now the goal is sustaining the progress and continuing towards the path of having this be a world-class center that people are very proud of, and that we, you know, have a huge wait list. That's where we're going here, and feel very good about their children being there, and we're moving very well in that direction. And so the sustaining of that will also be something that we're looking at.
Other comments around the table? Well, thank you ever so much for coming. I'm very sorry about the confusion. And I'm sorry to keep you.
Yeah, I've got to keep that. You're safe.
Marty, you have quite an honor right now.
No, we've got George.
Oh, George.
Yeah, George. Okay, yeah.
Raise your hand.
You passed.
What has happened?
Oh, yeah, it was quorum. Quorum, no problem.
No. We have.
You want to know who's the two-thirds?
We're a running vote right now on the charter. So.
Oh.
Okay. So we discussed it. Just to bring you both up to speed, unless
no, go ahead.
So resolution one was the original resolution this year. And it moved the charter and bylaws, and this was important because we realized, because what we've done, if you both remember, is we've taken a lot of stuff out of the current charter and moved it, made the current charter really solid rules that shouldn't change, and anything that's sort of operating procedures, committees, has moved to the bylaws. And so the original thought here was this way we have paired documents, nothing is left hanging. So we had a discussion and we decided to move forward with both vote on the charter and bylaws. So R1 moves both of those documents. And we've taken votes before to take the bylaws and the committee structure of three broad committees. And we had some discussions, but we've had tons of discussions about the charter and made the charter perfect. And the charter requires the president's approval, but the bylaws will not. So we voted on both documents, acknowledging that the bylaws may have some mistakes in it, some things we may want to tool, but it's generally a good document, and they're paired, and it leaves nothing hanging, and we will revisit the bylaws, because bylaws just require this body's approval to amend anything in the future. So that's what we're voting on, and we are we need 13 yay votes to approve it, and we have 12 right now.
Do you want to just go both of us?
Okay.
One at a time. One, two, three.
Oh, my God. Wow. No, I really think this is an exciting time, because I think we've made a major change in the charter, which I think is going to really help the assembly over the long haul. And I think the bylaws need further consideration, which I certainly haven't given them. But since they're so much easier to change, I thought we would spend most of our time on the next meeting.
Well, the president's the next meeting.
President's the next meeting, so it may be the meeting after that.
February 23rd?
Yes.
But yeah, we do need to spend a lot of time on the next meetings. But we will have the president the next meeting, so feel free to tell him how great we are and we're giving him a new charter.
Maybe he can answer the question about BCTC.
About what?
The VCTC, whether they talk to the people kind of.
Oh, probably not. Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, if we have time to whatever, I've got some bylaws questions. Can we start having that?
Actually, sorry to be a troublemaker here, but it would be really great to get the name of a JCC search committee representative to Dean Lookingdale was.
Thank you. That was not on my cheat sheet.
Yes, so I had mentioned it to me, and
yes.
I made all kinds of calls on the. Ari, you probably better explain it, but basically, there's a search committee. It's going to meet once for. I believe it will meet once for about 3 hours to go through some applicants and decide who are the top applicants, right?
For what post is this, please?
Judicial post counselor.
I can fill in a few more details.
Go for it.
Okay, so the judicial post counselor is kind of like the public defender. It's a law school student who defends students who are charged with the JA with some offense and represents them in front of the hearing board.
if they choose not to hire a lawyer, which you can do. There are lawyers who specialize in that campus code of conduct. Anyway, it's both a prestigious position for students in the law school and a really important part of our campus conduct system. And following the procedure that is in the charter that was just adopted because they were anticipating it was going to go this way, the president appoints a search committee to which the UA is entitled to have representation, and this is important because the UA confirms the ultimate appointee. So whoever is representing the UA will have to try to anticipate the kinds of questions UA would have as they determine the recommendations for the president. And it's the president who names the person who will fill the position, and then the UA confirms it.
And I would like to just add one little bit to that as chair from my many sins of the hearing board. I've sat in these hearings, and the judicial codes counselor is really enormously important in helping the students develop a case. And in the past two that I've sat in, really the judicial codes counselor carried the day in terms of getting witnesses that made sense and were made a good case. And really, it's very important. And so I would urge that somebody from this group be willing to serve for this one committee. And I think we are can ask for volunteers.
This is vetting the applications and then interviewing candidates.
And I'm not sure if they interview candidates. They recommend two or three to the president with a report. And
we don't meet the candidates? You don't meet the candidates?
I don't know if they review written applications or they actually meet with the candidates. Apparently they resolve all of their business in one long meeting that usually has to happen on a weekend. So it's just a commitment to one 3-hour meeting that may happen on a weekend.
Don't all volunteer at once.
Why a weekend? I don't understand. Who is it who sets the agenda on this? I mean, sets the time of the meeting?
The chair of the committee, who's appointed by the president, and he has for many years appointed Dean Lookingfield as the dean of students at the law school.
Okay. Blessings on you. Thank you.
I don't have to have nominations and seconders and speeches and votes. And
I think we've done it. Everybody's in agreement.
Well, you tell me that you're being unrelated.
I'll bring my Robert's rule.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have 15 minutes till we have the CCA resolution folk with us, right?
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about bylaws in the meantime? Do we want to sing songs? Or Randy?
Well, I'll just, one of the reasons I wanted Linda and Lynette to come here was that I think we've experienced two things this past year in terms of child care. We've experienced some kind of friction, and we've experienced the importance of the issue. And like I said just before, I think the friction actually turned out to be very important. And I hope that when we set the committees, the child care, that there is some permanence to the child care committee, because as Linda research shows her, it's going to become bigger and bigger and bigger issue, and having representation from all the constituencies that the UA represents is important to the issue and important to human resources.
I was going to raise the same thing. The current, I shouldn't say that, now that we've passed Resolution 1, the old charter had a provision in it. I think I've got it in front of me here. There it is. Article 931, Subcommittee on Child Care Services. And then it goes on to spell out in four paragraphs what it consists of, who appoints members, ex officio members, et cetera, et cetera. The current, the one that we've now passed, charter, doesn't specify any committee. It says we can create committees. The bylaw, I think it's Article 6, says that we have three committees. We've got CJC, Campus Welfare, Campus Infrastructure. Campus Welfare is given, if I can find this, is given several charges. Sorry. Recruitment and appointment of members to the University Hearing Review Board, diversity and inclusion, family support, health services, and anything else relevant by the board. So family support is the one that we're talking about here. That I think is intentionally broad. It's child care, but it's also elder care, it's also, you know, you name it. So this is I think a broad committee with a broad mandate that is able to look at the intersection of these issues. As our guests very well said today, child care is going to be a big issue in the future, sure, but there are other issues here that are relevant and useful. And what I wonder, and I would have asked him this, I don't mean to give the impression that I'm raising the question after they've left the room, I would have asked him this. If not, doesn't this, my perspective is that this is an improvement, that we have a committee, a standing committee with a broader authority to look at all sorts of welfare issues, child care included. And this is a committee that, narrow is not the right word. I wouldn't want to call our current child care subcommittee narrow, but I think that this is an increased authority, that these people who are I went to the last meeting, were motivated, interested, were involved, make a great contribution on this campus, can put those skills that they have, those talents, into this campus welfare committee with a broader mandate, bring that expertise to bear, and make everybody better for it. That being said, my favorite book over here, Robert's Rules, provides for committees. This is something we're talking about in the GPSA, so I'm familiar with this, I guess. Committees can create subcommittees. The limitation is that the subcommittee has to consist of members of the whole committee. So you've got 10 people on campus welfare or whatever. You could say you three are the child care subcommittee. Then they can meet, they report back to that committee, and that committee reports to us. The idea being to keep those lines of communication open. So my question, after all that rambling, is, to me, at least, this seems like an effective way to do this, a useful, helpful, productive use of talent and skill. Ari's word was it avoids siloing, this sort of people going off in their own things and doing their own stuff without knowing what else is going on. And they end up, I think, more powerful, more effective, more influential as a result.
I have a question about that. This means that the subcommittee that's so powerful and effective is now no longer existent because we passed the charter. It has to be reconstituted in the context of the current bylaws.
A provision in that resolution was that this becomes effective June 1st, so for the remainder of the year, all of the standing committees remain in place.
Mm-hmm.
So, the services subcommittee remains on child care services subcommittee and R1 exists as a subcommittee through the end of the year.
So, we have to, between now and June 1st, which is a big agenda, figure out how to transfer all of that great energy into something that will continue to do something rather than something that will continue to look around for problems and try and get moved in that direction, because they are accomplishing something. And if we say, well, you're accomplishing something now, but as of June 1st you won't be doing what you're doing until we decide what you're doing, then until the Campus Welfare Committee does, then we lose all of that energy.
Well, I mean, couldn't those, this is hypothetical, the committees are staffed through the regular committee staffing system, couldn't those people, or majority of them, or most of them, or those interested, be part of the campus welfare?
Well, that's the point. You want to say, perhaps somewhere along the line, all current committees are immediately drafted into one of those three committees, and then those three committees
each individually sit down and decide how to parse out their various subcommittees' responsibilities. Either that or you're saying, well, the Sustainability Committee, for example, I mean, I don't know, I'm not on anywhere, but it doesn't exist as of June 1st until whatever Campus Welfare says, we ought to have a Sustainability Committee and here's what you'll do and here's who's on it.
But under the current system, sorry, I shouldn't say that. Say that it was last summer and the session of the UA came to an end and the new session began June 1st. The committees would all cease to exist, right? We have to restaff them all every year. So we're still restaffing our committees this summer. My hope would be that those involved in the now old committees would continue to be involved in the new committees.
I guess
they would apply for staffing and they would...
I didn't understand that they go away back to the... maybe this is an issue to discuss, but I didn't think everybody went off committees immediately as of June 1st. For one thing, for example, things do go on over the summer. For example, sustainability issues can be addressed over the summer very effectively.
Right.
I agree with Marty's point just because I wouldn't want to get into a situation where a community like childcare, that they, everything that they were talking about, they don't really need us to do. So I wouldn't want them to come back in the fall and then us say to them that you're no longer part of the committee, and then they're like, they just meet on their own and do it on their own time and don't come to us. So we have to kind of like balance that and like not disrespect anyone.
We're going to have to manage the change.
Randy?
My favorite book is Orbit of Greece. I think the Child Care Committee has been really so effective. The good things that happened to Bright Horizons now wouldn't have happened without them. And they put up with a lot of flack and an under amount of support, I think, from us than they should have. And so, first of all, I think they're so confident and work so hard that they should be here. But I also feel a little bit that we owe them to write them in to the bylaws and say, here's a committee that, as you saw, Evan, they have a lot to do just as the committee themselves working on child care. And the things that they're talking about and coordinating and discussing with a broad range of people is in some kind of vacuum of support, too, at the same time, is enormous. And they deserve a line in there that this committee exists.
Okay, Ed?
Sorry. So, campus welfare is very much something that HR has a role in all of the place, right? So, like, give a little bit of context, because I've met with Lynette on several occasions to talk about when we were trying to figure out what type of committee structures. She has all kinds of experience with both these committees and in general campus welfare and HR considerations. What I kind of vision this is that we're not saying there can't be a child care services subcommittee. It's that Evan hit it on the box, right on the nose, that there's a lot of issues to deal with that are similar to child care, but also imagine elder care. And Lynette specifically said, at some point in the very near future, elder care is going to be as important, if not more important, than child care is right now. And so I see it as campus welfare committee we can manage the transition for people who are very motivated onto this committee. They can establish subcommittees as they need when issues arise. The important factor actually being, in my opinion, is that subcommittees dissolve themselves at the end of the year. So then at the beginning of the next year, when you assess you need to reestablish that subcommittee, or has that subcommittee answered the problems and now there's a new issue? Has child care, is it being managed well? And now we can take resources from who were on that child care subcommittee and other committees, and now have we transitioned to an elder care? And we need an elder care subcommittee for this year. So that it's very narrow, specific topics. You discuss them, and then you reassess whether you need to continue discussing that topic. but you have a standing committee which is broader and encompasses all of those perspectives.
Well, not only that, Ed, but I think your standing committee is going to be composed of a number of us around the table until we get off the assembly. But in other words, there'll be assembly members on these committees, and more than one, so that I think communication will be greatly strengthened over the present arrangements where there's nobody from the child care subcommittee sitting around this table at the moment.
Well, I've gone since, I think, November.
Okay.
To each meeting.
Right.
And,
okay. Fair enough.
It's important to remember we have the Family Services Committee, which does very good work too, right? And this is kind of an expansion of the Family Services Committee with the opportunity to have a subcommittee really be a subcommittee of that committee.
So in theory, I have no disagreement.
Yeah. But in practice, Ooh. They're doing great work right now. And we don't
in
want
practice,
to really
here you have enormously dedicated people that through self-motivation, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, we clearly want to maintain that, and it's a
and reward it.
And reward it, yeah. Ari?
I just wanted to recap because there was a period of time where I was maintaining two different drafts, and I don't remember if it was the November meeting or the December meeting. I think it was the last meeting in November where Evan brought up it's getting problematic to manage two drafts, and there was a vote mm-hmm. at the time about which model to pursue, and this was the model chosen. Also, another...
Well, it was a straw poll, too. It was like, which way are we leaning?
It wasn't a straw poll.
It was a formal vote. But nonetheless, I think that we can accommodate what you...
Not a final vote.
Well, I think we can accommodate what it is you want to achieve within this structure. It doesn't seem to me that it's mutually exclusive at all, and I just don't see a big problem.
So with it. If it's not mutually exclusive, not a big problem, could we do it my way this way?
Well, I think you need to make a specific proposal.
I think, if I may put words into Randy's mouth, I think you would propose something like taking the language of the old charter, Article 931, and sticking that into the new bylaws somewhere in Article 6 under 5.2.
And that's about the Arms Health Committee.
That's the Campus Welfare Committee.
I mean, the old charter.
Right, the old 531 is Subcommittee on Child Care Services.
Point of information, I'm sorry. In the bylaws that we just put in, I should know this, but I don't. The bylaws say that all subcommittees will be reconstituted each year. Is that in there?
That's Robert Rules of Order, as far as I understand.
That's Robert's Rules of Order. But
no.
No.
There's nothing in Robert's Rules that says you have to constitute committees every year.
I think general practice subcommittees dissolve.
So it's the practice standing committees can be either a designated committee or a subcommittee. There's also the terminology ad hoc, select, or special. But again, you know, that's Robert's Rules. We don't necessarily have to adopt that structure or, you know, not.
Right. We've had standing committees. I mean, that's the thing. So there was a misapprehension around here that all your standing committees went out of business.
Yeah, I'm just looking at an ad hoc committee. They can make it.
Another question: what is our relationship between us and Robert's Rules of Order? Do Robert's Rules of Order rule under conditions where we say they don't?
That's the new bylaws, Article 3.4. The procedures for debate and general conduct matters not specifically described in this document are Robert's Rules. So we can overrule whatever we want.
Okay.
If we don't talk about it, then Robert's Rules is binding.
Charter, bylaws,
and that's not a change.
Just information.
Mm-hmm.
One other point I wanted to make, and you know, it was a straw poll, it was a vote, so there wasn't a specific reason selected for why one model was chosen over the other. But I think one of the things that was important about this model is that instead of trying to, through committee structure,
get every interest to be a member of the committee, that more of the committee would be members of the UA who might not have expertise in a particular area, and the experts would still have their voice just as they would have had if they were committee members, but through a process of hearings and meetings that are focused on particular issues. So, you know, if the committee is talking about child care and the support notice becomes important, a notice goes out 2 weeks before, a month before, gives enough time for people with an interest in it, such as current members of the child care committee, other members in child care community, and they can come to the committee and present their views. They're still participating in the process and playing a meaningful role, but not necessarily as voting members of the committee.
So, to go with Marty's concern here about this cutoff in June, where we need a transition for that. But as I understand it here, these three major committees are the ones who are going to determine their subcommittees. Isn't that so? I mean, we can't tell them what to do. They're just going to be a committee and they're going to do it.
I just want to give one caveat to that. They can form subcommittees, but only of their own members.
Exactly. I understand. Fine. That's the transition we've got to make. That is, by June 1, it seems to me we've got to have a pretty good idea of who are members on these committees, okay? The three major committees. And is that membership always going to come from us?
No, not entirely.
Not entirely, okay. So we've got a job there because we've got to figure out who's going to be there. And then those committees ought to do the negotiation before June 1 with the people who have had an interest in the old regime, so they can set it up. So, but by June 1, they know.
The problem is, of course, that a lot of people aren't appointed to the assembly by June 1. That is, I haven't seen an assembly come together on June 1 or May, whether it would be May, actually. That actually is the assembly that sits here in September. So you're going to have a period when you're actually looking at six members who have to be members of all these committees. The other thing is, I really think we're not. It's a nice sort of concept, but the fact is, the Family Service Committee, I mean, you've had lots of discussions with Lynette and so forth. Family Service Committee started because Human Resources came to us and asked us, saying we have lots of issues of general needs that we have to keep going in discussions. And for us to say now, and then they put a lot of people on here who are not, you know, they're the experts, I guess what you're saying is. They're the experts, and we were to constitute this committee with the experts, you know, from their division and from so forth would be on the committee as well, and they'd talk about issues with us that came to their attention. What you're saying now with the current system is we have people who are reactive to problems that may come to them, you know, from the community with family services. We call in the experts and say, well, what's your opinion about this? Or would you like to go in this direction? Or what's happened? Why is this a problem? As opposed to what Family and Services, what the Family Service Committee was trying to do, which was to have the experts in consultation with us say, here's a question that we have. We may be moving towards elder care. Let's air this issue before we make a commitment to a particular policy. And I'd say this about family services as an example, but I think you're going to have the same thing with sustainability. I think you're going to have the same thing with, you know, several other committees like planning and so forth, where you want to have an engaged person from here working out and responding on a more immediate level to policies as they are developing, as opposed to ex post facto things that are problems that arise that you want to try to remediate.
I think you're exactly right. I think that you're right, and that's actually what we're proposing to do, because one of the things with the leadership breakfast this morning was with the, I forget his exact title, but the guy who sets the policy, who manages creation of policies at the university. What our charter is now proposing, if the president approves it, is that the university assembly is seen as the stakeholder group to come to when the policies that affect the broad campus community are about to be set or in the process of being set. The impact statement of a policy before the policy is ever set in place is who are the relevant stakeholders. So before a policy gets set, the UA is a relevant stakeholder. You need to consult with the UA. Okay, this may be something which is has some controversy to it. We have a committee. We're giving that to the committee to talk about it. It says we need appropriate time to be able to deal with this. So I think we're going to be in that conversation.
I just came from a meeting with the Senate. At the Senate, faculty are reacting through a resolution to policies or decisions that were made that the faculty, through a 50-1 vote, or 50-something-1 vote, said were faculty decisions that should have had involved consultation with the faculty at the outset. I think you're going to have down, and the reason why, and there was a member of the administration there, the vice president for something or other, who said, we didn't think that these were issues that you, that really, and yet we talked to certain numbers of the faculty, and we maybe didn't talk to the right one, or the ones that you think were right, but this is, and we also think this is not a decision that should have involved, you know, extensive faculty consultation. My point is we're going to get to these things over and over and over again, not because anybody's venal, but just because the nature of the institution is that way. And what we have now, is what we have now in this committee structure is something that's a little bit earlier on in this process. I think it's very nice, don't get me wrong, the concept is nice. But the fact is the committees like sustainability and family services came about, or family services came about because, you know, somebody had foresight to think that we ought to be consulted at the outset.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
All right.
I disagree that the current system has really promoted that kind of proactive communication. That was just described, because in my view the child care subcommittee has had some really significant communications issues with this assembly. There have been a number of instances where it's jumped ahead of the assembly, where it's gone straight to the Daily Sun and promoted opinions that directly contradict the resolutions that the assembly that it supposedly purports to has adopted. And I think a large reason that has happened has been because it doesn't have the membership overlap with this assembly to really be in sync with what's going on with it. And that's been a pattern in most UA committees. Even with the Codes and Judicial Committee, as we saw earlier today, there's a resolution that they put forward that they put a lot of thought into that may be full of merit, but because there is zero overlap between the UA and the Codes and Judicial Committee right now, that resolution is going to wait a whole other month to be voted on because nobody in the UA knows what it's about. So, I agree that the proactive communication is really critical. I think that this model is intended to do that better, but to do it a little bit differently. The main thing that it's changing is that instead of having the stakeholders trying to compose a committee so that every stakeholder is a member of the committee, it focuses on having the committee be an instrument of the assembly to connect with stakeholders, and then makes it basically the way you include stakeholders in this model is you put out a notice in a place where the stakeholders are going to look for it. And that's what gets them into the process, as opposed to, you know, trying to get every member you can think of from every different constituency, which consumes a lot of resources and ends up leaving a lot of interest out.
Could I suggest that we postpone the rest of this discussion to next time, because I think more work needs and more discussion needs to be done. And we now have a CCA resolution, and we really need to get on with that if we're going to get out by 6. Evan, do you want to talk about the CCA?
That's why I put my hand up. I was going to say exactly that.
Can I just make a quick suggestion that between now and our next time of discussion, we have some thought in people that know these two charters very well on how to make a transition that continues engagement through the summer period and into the beginning of the next semester.
Yes, no, I think that makes lots of sense.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Evan?
I'm happy to talk about this resolution and the history of these issues, but perhaps I should defer to Professor Kellogg, who knows more about all of this than I do.
Okay. I assume that you all have some background on what's been going on with the CCA.
We've read the motion.
Okay. It has been, for the history of the CCA goes way, way back, and one of the things that has been consistent, all of its manifestations through the years since the 1950s, actually, has been that grants were offered. Some of the money allotted by the provost has been given out to faculty, students, staff, student organizations, by a competitive process that's voted on by a panel, you know, after they have mm-hmm. done a formal application, a grant application. And the new, there was an ad hoc committee last year that decided to, again, try and restructure the CCA so that it is more efficient or whatever. And they came up with a plan that would eliminate the grant. And in theory, the new report, which has no details in it yet. I mean, I am, by the way, the interim director of the CCA. I have been for, this is the third year, and this will be the end of my term anyway. So this has all happened on my watch. And so the grant, theoretically, in this report that was issued by the ad hoc committee, for 2 years, the provost will continue to make that amount of money available, which is about something in the order of $70,000. We're talking about chump change here as far as the university is concerned. So it's like, yeah. Anyway, so they've agreed that the provost has agreed to make that much money available for 2 years, but not to be given out as grants, but to be doled out to the department in the proportions that they had in the last 2 years received grants. Now, that isn't, even if that were a good way of doing it, that's not fair because, you know, the grants are distributed proportionally the same way every year. So, and after those 2 years, it is going to be then left to the colleges to find the money to match those grants. And there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. So the general response to that on the campus, almost across the board, I mean, I think it's almost universal, that there needs to be a revision of that so that even though they're definitely going to change most of the CCA's objective to create a big project every year that sort of focuses on some large personality, and then everyone is allowed to create satellite projects that go with that. However, that's going to happen, but we are trying to establish a way to keep the grants administered in a university-wide way rather than department by department, where first of all the students and faculty for that matter lose the opportunity to have the experience of writing a grant application and having it be competitively evaluated. So Evan came up with the idea of presenting a resolution to this body. There's been much more than that going on. There's been a petition. There is, I will say, and Dean Kleinman, who has chaired this committee, has wanted me to be sure and say that the discussion has been reopened. And in fact, he has, because there was so much negative press about this and so much opposition to this new plan, he has allowed us to establish a larger committee to discuss this possibility. We had one meeting, and Evan was in attendance at that. It remains to be seen, and I want to stay somewhat neutral in this because, I mean, there was a certain concession on the part of the committee manifested as in him to at least open the dialogue to other people, which he did not at first want to do. What he wanted to do was sit down with me and structure this thing so that the grand projet, as they call it, would happen and that the grants would be someplace else. There are other parts of the CCA which we also don't know. We also give awards. We give an alumni artist award, an undergraduate award every year. It has been not decided at all who's going to administer those, if anyone. So that's another issue, but I think for this body, the grants are the thing. Is that?
Yeah.
And So we are trying to find a way, and Edmund will can lend something to this too. Generally at that meeting there were about 15 people from different departments, all of whom said, no, we need to keep it consistent. We need to keep the grants consistent. If money is given out to the departments, it's only for 2 years anyway. So that's where we stand on this. Right now, we have sort of put together a working group of those 15 people, all of whom said, let's find a way. Why do we need to decentralize this? Why can't we find a way to keep the grant centralized so that everyone has the same access? And, you know, this also, the new system leaves out any college who is not an arts department that's represented by the CCA. So we would have an engineer could have applied, could and did often apply for a grant, and if it was a visual art project, it would go through the visual arts sponsor. If it was a music project, it would go through the music department. You know, it was everyone on campus had access, staff had access. So a lot, anyone who is not specifically an arts department will lose out on this. So there are many, yes.
As director of this program, were you on the ad hoc committee?
No. It was all very secretive.
So I want to say, based on that line alone, I'm voting for this resolution.
Well,
I think
I'm finding it hard to stay neutral in this because it was done in a very kind of underhanded way.
Well, that's wrong. That's wrong. And that's what this body should stand for.
Right. I agree. In fact, I was methodically left out of any dealings with that ad hoc committee. In fact, we were asked, my administrator at the CCA, Pamela Lafayette, and I were asked to come up with a list of people who would be good participants in that committee. We came up with a terrific list both inside Cornell and outside. Not one person was taken off our list.
I think I might write the Cornell rules of order, the way committees are established.
It turned out to be, and it was very upended, and when it came out, I didn't want to go into the details. I think you get the picture.
People had the same complaints when they had that problem with the Schwarz Center.
Right.
How they thought it was
and African Studies has had the same situation where they pulled the wool out from
under UCTC.
Yeah, I think that, and that's why at the end we said, okay, well at least open the dialogue up. Look at all the negative. Look at how people are responding to this. Don't just sit there and push this through. And of course, Dean Kleinman actually doesn't know how to push this through. He wants me to help structure it with him. He wants me to sit there and come up with the rules. So I said, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I want some of my colleagues involved in this process because we're all stakeholders here. And that's, finally, I have to give credit to John Silicano in the provost's office who has been handed this as his responsibility. He actually went to Dean Kleinman and said, look, you really need to open this up. And that's when he allowed us to have that meeting. So,
The big project... what's the funding situation there? Because I was given to understand that a chunk of funds was being taken away, and obviously would have to be taken away from small grants.
Right.
And that would go to bringing a star artist in.
Well, the budget is the same. The budget has not increased from the CCA budget. The provost has said they would keep that the same, which ends up being counting Pamela's salary, the director's stipend, office of, the whole administrative cost is a whole grand total of $750,000.
And that would be continued.
No, I'm sorry, $175,000. That didn't count.
$175,000.
Yeah,
that would continue for.
That would continue for the. No. No, that's the whole thing. That's the big project. $68,000 will be distributed among the departments for 2 years for the grant. The rest of it goes to the big project, and they all admit that they can't do their big project for that, and they have to do some grant writing themselves.
I was just going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, I think by point of clarification, the budget going into this, again, averaging over 3 years, is $175,000.
Right,
the provost
right.
said he'd increase it by $50,000.
Yes, but that was...
Pamela's salary.
That's Pamela's salary. What they did in the first... The one thing we did get them to change, in the first report, they said that there's one full-time administrator now, that's Pamela Lafayette. She does everything in that office. And they wanted to add grant writing to her job description and cut the position in half. So it would be a half-time job, and they would double the duty. So we tried to say, well, how is that going to work? And so the provost added $50,000 in to cover putting back the half position, which means they were going to take that half of that position and put it toward the big project. So So he did add. He upped it. I think it's up to 225 now total. And her job will be back to full time. So they're planning to take more of the money for the project. Yeah.
So if the grant is very complicated, I am still trying to figure out where all the money goes.
Me too.
So if the grants were reinstated at a value of $70,000, would that, in order to reinstate those grants, that would have to come out of the coffers
for the grant project. Right.
So then the grant project, which already doesn't have enough money, now has 70 grand less of money. Right?
That's right. However, you know, the provost is committing that money for 2 years to be distributed to the departments to ease the transition, as mm-hmm. he said. So, yes, it would come out of the grant program.
But it's fair to say that after 2 years, it's gone, right?
It's fair to say that it's gone, because Dean Kleiman keeps saying, but all the deans have agreed to promise that money will be guaranteed. Well,
what it says, this is the provost letter, it says, my office will provide an additional $68,000 per year for 2 years to those units previously receiving small grants. These additional funds will be administered by the units with the expectation that when the central funding is no longer provided in fiscal year 2014, the individual units will continue to provide similar funding opportunities for students and faculty. What I've said in the resolution is basically that this is constitutes a non-binding expectation. There's no enforcement, there's no sense of where this money might come from, there's no plan.
Also, it's very vague because this money is distributed differently every semester. You know, it's very unfair that some department that maybe only applied for one grant in the last 2 years is going to get $12. I mean, it's silly.
Sure.
It was under my understanding last time that the one large annual fund would be larger than the cumulative amount of individuals.
They hope so, but they don't have. They have to raise that money.
I mean, I'm definitely in favor of the resolution. I'm just curious. Can you comment briefly on how, like, the scope of projects will change with the new funding?
Well, yes. I mean, the scope of projects. Well, that's complicated in that the CCA didn't just do grants; they also did other kinds of projects. You know, larger projects. For the last 2 years, we've had a series at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. We did, before I came on, there was a couple of big campus projects. There was what they called X Design Group from the furniture design. They went and got a lot of publicity for a design they did in a big show in New York City. We did the, Patrick Daugherty did, I don't know if any of you were around when this huge installation was put up in College Town. And so there were a lot of other things. The idea now is they will form a committee that looks on paper. I mean, what they're actually proposing looks very similar to what the CCA is now. A committee of a representative from each of these departments to sit there and decide what the big project is going to be, who the famous person or whatever is going to be to come and lead it, and then people will be invited to submit proposals that are tangential to that. There's not a lot of enthusiasm for that because, you know, most people don't want to mold their ideas to someone else's project. And also, this has been tried before. There have been plenty of attempts over many decades to try and do these kind of things and include everybody in it, but it doesn't usually work out so well. So they know, and they've actually admitted, they suggested several different ideas. One of them was bringing Martin Scorsese. A second one was to actually bring a 747 and hang it in the art squad, call it the flying car. And they know that these were just things the committee sort of came up with
as
examples. They know that nothing that they propose is possible on the budget they have. So that's why they included grant writing as a necessity for whoever is the administrative person and or the faculty director.
We're getting late on time.
Yeah.
Do you think this resolution is likely to be helpful?
Well, I mean, I have to say that I'm not clear on what the bindingness of these resolutions is.
It's no binding at all. It simply represents...
That's our big secret.
It simply represents the view of a representative body of the university to the president.
Yes.
I think what I would say, maybe you would agree, that this resolution is perhaps already having a little bit its desired effect, without having been...
Well, the reason that... part of the reason that we got the meeting that we did was because Provost Silicano asked about this and said we ought to really try not to have a resolution before the UA that this is a problem. He would like to stay this off. However, I think of course it's helpful. We also had an online petition that got 400 signatures, all of which were in support of keeping the grants going. They were from past grant recipients, their parents, alumni, you know, faculty. So there's been a lot of that, sort of the same idea. It doesn't bind anything, but it shows that there's a lot of people in support.
We're out of time, Faith.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could just read the two resolve clauses and we can vote.
Yes.
Is that
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of whereas giving the history. It leads to resolve that the University Assembly recommends that Kent Fox, Provost of Cornell University, or his designee, John Silicano, or whomever, hold a public meeting with interested parties, including faculty, staff, and students. Resolve that the University Assembly recommends that the Provost's Office reinstate individual grants as a constituent component of the CCA. Resolve that it be forwarded to a bunch of people.
Okay.
Important people.
Yeah, right. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, is there a second? Any further discussion?
I think you ought to remove recommends. I think you ought to say resolve that the provost do the following.
I had that, and I got a whole bunch of objections, so I put in the university. Well, not the provost, other people.
Now, Evan, one question. The first part of that recommends that there be a public forum. Would the committee that we've formed, if they are actually allowed to be impactful, would that constitute that? I mean, because we have... Or does it need to be larger than that?
Well, I think, like I said, I realize we're out of time. I think I had envisioned, and I know we discussed this, that there be, you know, a public forum to which anybody could attend.
Right.
I think that's important to have an open meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's about the words.
I
think any resolution is only as good as the driving force behind it. I think we should take a very similar procedure as we handle childcare, try getting in that room again and try to have that type of discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, all in favor of this? Ten in favor, opposed, abstain, okay, and one abstention. And I declare the meeting adjourned.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming.
It's a pleasure.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.